Welcome to the Daily Stoic Podcast, where each day we read a passage of ancient wisdom designed to help you in your everyday life. On Tuesdays, we take a closer look at these Stoic ideas and how we can apply them in our actual lives. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy. I'm just about to go into the studio to record my latest audiobook. My wife and I have been listening to audiobooks. We've been listening to audiobooks in the car as a family just to keep our kids off screens because Audible is amazing. And Audible is also the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases and next to listen recommendations to satisfy every type of thriller listener. If you want breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that will enthrall you, even brand new and exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, well, then you want to check out Audible. My wife and I were just raving about this true crime audiobook that we read called Furious Hours. And then I've been raving about this book, Night of the Grizzlies, which I loved. Audio piques the imagination and it brings thrillers to life. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog. Visit audible.com/dailystoic or text dailystoic to 500-500. That's audible.com/dailystoic or text dailystoic to 500-500. The Daily Stoic is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. One of the cool things about podcasts is that you can multitask while you're listening, but depending on what you're doing right now, like for instance, if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you could be doing. You could be getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $700 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join over 29 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $698 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Why we admire Marcus Aurelius. Marcus Aurelius was smart. He was rich and powerful. He won wars and conquered territories. But that doesn't explain why we are still talking about his meditations so many thousands of years later. As Brand Blanchard would observe of Marcus's writings way back in 1984, few now care about the marches and countermarches of the Roman commanders. What the centuries have clung to is a notebook of the thoughts by a man whose real life was largely unknown, who put down in the midnight dimness not the events of the day or the plans of the morrow, but something of far more permanent interest, the ideals and aspirations that a rare spirit lived by. So what were those ideals and aspirations? What did that rare spirit live by? The opening pages of Meditations reveal that spirit quite well, for Meditations begins with a section entitled Debts and Lessons. Across 17 entries and some 2,100 words, a full 10% of the book, Marcus takes the time to acknowledge and codify the lessons he had learned from the important people in his life. As we said recently, it's remarkable to remember that his book was never to be seen by the people mentioned. It was purely for his own edification that Marcus wanted to remember that his grandfather taught him to be courteous. His father taught him to be manly without ostentation. His mother taught him to be generous. His tutor instilled a positive work ethic. We know that Marcus tried to live by the four virtues. In book three, he said he'd never found anything better in life than courage, discipline, justice, and wisdom. In book six, he added epithets for himself, values he said should not be traded for any others: upright, modest, straightforward, sane, cooperative, disinterested. Isn't that what we're all pursuing? Isn't that what we are all looking for? The virtues, the code that guided that rare spirit of a man. Isn't that what we want to take and apply in our own lives? It's even remarkable to see what Marcus promised would happen if you followed this prescription. If you maintain your claim to these epithets, he wrote, without caring if others apply them to you or not, you become a new person living a new life. If you want to talk about passing on a legacy, That's the best you can do. If you want to be admired, be a good person. Live life by a rare spirit. Be in control of yourself. Be generous. Live by those four virtues that Marcus lived by every day, even if no one gives you credit. And then, and only then, will you be worthy of lasting and permanent interest. And speaking of lasting and permanent interest, in case you missed it, we have our own edition of Meditations that we're publishing, a leather-bound edition of this timeless book that I helped bring into the world, mostly because my own copy is a little worse for wear, some 16 years after buying it, and I wanted something to really stand the test of time. This new one has a genuine leather cover with these gold foil imprints. There's 12 illustrations for each of the 12 books of Meditations. Comes in this cool box. There's these cool in-sheets, and then there's a ribbon to mark your page as you're going through it. And then, of course, there is my Life of Marcus that I wrote at the end of the book for all of you to read. We'd love for you to check it out, which you can grab at dailystoic.com/meditations. We're shipping them out next week because we only have a very limited run of them. So grab one while you still can before they sell out, and it almost certainly will, at dailystoic.com/meditations. One of my absolute favorite writers is Arthur Brooks. I've had him on the podcast twice. I read his columns for The Atlantic. I've read his work many times. We carry his book, Strength to Strength, here at the Painted Porch. And he came out, this feels like forever ago now, in March he was here for South by Southwest. He came out to sign some of the books. And he and I talked specifically about the Stoics, what the Stoics got wrong, his equation for happiness, and much, much more. I think you're going to like this riffing between me and Arthur Brooks. We've had the longer form interviews on the podcast, so if you want even more from him, you can listen. We've got basically another 2 hours of conversation with Arthur. But for now, why don't you just listen to he and I talking about some Stoic ideas? And you must check out his writing for The Atlantic. He most recently wrote a piece that quoted me, but it's all about Seneca's solutions for happiness. It's called 11 Ancient Solutions for Modern Malaise. And I'll link to that in the episode page as well. Thanks so much. It's always wonderful talking to Arthur. I ran into him at a dinner party. That's how we first got connected. And then he happened to know my podcast producer, Jane Brady Knight, and she set this up. So thanks to Jane as well. And enjoy this conversation with me and Arthur Brooks talking about the Stoics and the art of happiness.
Most important thing that we get wrong in the reading of the Stoics is not actually being alive in our own feelings and understanding ourselves, but trying to block out the things that we consider to be weak.
What are some happiness strategies from the ancients?
There are lots. I mean, obviously, there's so much to choose from, but let me think of three really contrasting ones. And we'll start with the guy who is the anti-Stoic, Epicurus. Mm-hmm. His big idea about happiness is it comes from peace. It comes from tranquility. It comes from good feelings. So get all the bad feelings out of your life. Get all the hassles and problems out of your life. Live well, live with peace, and happiness will follow.
We think of Epicurus saying that pleasure is happiness, but really he's saying about removing sort of unpleasantness first.
No. People think of him as some sort of unbridled, immoral hedonist. That's completely wrong. Epicurus, I mean, he had a cult and a compound and a commune or something where people were like, yeah, the Epicurean way was a big deal. But he was really all about peace, all about being able to live well without the problems of life impinging upon you. If you take away all those problems, then that's when you find your happiness.
All right, so what are the other two?
Second one is, let's take this one, this is a classic. This is from Jesus Christ, radical love. That's the secret of happiness, because happiness is love. Love is God, God is love, and happiness is the ultimate thing that you can acquire in life and acquire in the life hereafter as well.
In Meditations, Marcus Aurelius, I think it's from one of his philosophical mentors, he says, I'd be curious what you think of this paradox, he says, the key is to be free of passion, but full of love.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's actually, there's something to that, although the Christian worldview would say that to be free of passion is a problem too, because what you need is passion. Well, it's a different sense than what Epicurus would have said and what the Stoics would have said too. The excess emotionality that we would associate with that is certainly, yeah, I can actually find the consistency between those two.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, anger, lust, greed, desire, yeah, etc. Exactly. Compared to
the basic empathy, positive and negative emotions. Yes. Yeah, and the complex emotions that actually come from being a person fully alive, that's quite different. I agree.
Okay, third one.
Third one is, let's go to the Lord Buddha, 500 years before Christ, who would say that the secret to happiness is want less. This is really important, and this gets actually to the concept of passions, as we were talking, as Epicurus or Epictetus, for that matter, would have understood passions. Want less, because that's the basis of attachment. And, you know, the first noble law of Buddhism is that life is suffering, where the word in Sanskrit is dukkha, which is really dissatisfaction. When you want more, all you do is you blow up your dissatisfaction. And the secret to defeating that in the eightfold path of the noble path of Buddhism is really, it comes down to wanting less.
I love it. What are some things you think the Stoics got wrong?
So probably the Stoics didn't actually get anything wrong, but there's a lot of the ways that we interpret the Stoics that we get wrong.
Sure.
In the way that we think about them. So one of the ways that people who don't read enough of your books, who are not, you know, daily consumers of this product, they get wrong is they think to be a Stoic, you need a stiff upper lip, not feel any suffering, that you need to actually bear yourself in a dignified way with pain, but you shouldn't actually feel pain, and you certainly shouldn't show people that you feel pain. That's wrong.
This is lowercase versus uppercase stoicism, you could say.
I think that's right. Yeah. I think that's right. So, you know, are you taking this pain stoically? That just means, you know, it's sort of British,
yes.
You know, stiff upper lip stuff. That's actually not how the Stoics, they feel the same things that we feel, but they actually find the meaning in them. And as such, they point their emotions in a productive direction and manage them appropriately. And so the most important thing that we get wrong in the reading of the Stoics is not actually being alive in our own feelings and understanding ourselves, but trying to block out the things that we consider to be weak.
And don't you think one of the things I think people get wrong about the Stoics is this idea that they're apathetic or resigned, that they sort of just defer to the status quo, which to me is belied by the fact of they were all involved in politics, they all created works of art, they all raised kids, they were all engaged in life, which is, I think, a theme in your work, that one of the best ways you can find happiness is by finding purpose, finding something, a project, a thing, a cause to put yourself into.
No, totally, and to dedicate yourself entirely to teaching. I mean, one of the most poignant Stoic moments, as far as I'm concerned, is the last words of Cicero. I mean, who arguably was a Stoic. I mean, he was kind of a mixed
bag. He's a fellow traveler.
Yeah, totally. And he was, you know, being pursued by Roman centurions to be put to death because he had, you know, crossed Mark Antony over the assassination of Julius Caesar. He was like getting canceled, man.
Yes.
I mean, we think it's bad today. Oof. And so he's being chased by these centurions and they track him down and they're about to cut his throat. And he says, there's nothing proper about what you're about to do to me, centurion, but do try to kill me properly.
I think some of those like epic last words, they come from a place of confidence and security and like that you know what matters in life. You can only have the sort of balls to sort of defy Nero, as Seneca does at the end, or Cato does at the end. You know, I think of Cato sitting down to read Socrates before taking his own life rather than submit to Caesar. To me, that's a person who knows what really matters in life, even though he's spending his few last minutes on earth with that thing.
Oh, it's so important. You know, this is, if there's one thing that we learn about the end of life from the Stoics, it should be that your last word should not be, oh, let me hang on for one more minute.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
It's like, I will take, you know, that machine, that test, that drug, whatever it happens to be, just give me 10 more minutes, just like gripping with your fingernails the very end or pleading for your life. I mean, look, your life's going to end, whether it's today or 30 years from now. Die with dignity and die in such a way that you can inspire other people.
Yeah, Marcus Aurelius dying of the plague, his friends are crying, and he says, don't cry about me. Think about all the people who have also lost their lives, and then think about your own mortality now in this moment. To me, he's how can I spend my last few minutes on earth productively, not to make a little more money, to write a more thing, but to just actually be there. He's being there for the people who are supposed to be there.
No, that's like, it turns out his real last words were, I should have bought more crap.
Yes, right. And it's not, I'm sorry. Well, his last words should have been something about, I really screwed up with Commodus. Please don't make him emperor, but he fell short there.
and careful with my son, yes.
Give me the equation for happiness.
The equation for happiness is that 50% is genetic, 25% is your circumstances, and 25% is your habit.
So we only control 25% of it.
Directly. Yeah. However, here's the interesting thing. So 50%, this comes from identical twin studies. There's a lot of great science on this, that 50% of your baseline happiness is genetic, but it's actually all actually having to do with your habits as well. Why? Because all of our genetics also have switches. You have proclivities and switches.
Sure.
So something like 60% of your tendency to be an alcoholic is genetic, but I have this incredible technology. It's called not drinking.
Right, sure.
Which means that you're not going to be an alcoholic under the circumstances. And the same
you
thing
is true.
You can
get sober or get help with said.
Yeah, or just not drink if both your parents are alcoholics, which is probably a pretty good strategy. And so this is the same thing with happiness. You have your baseline and understanding yourself, knowing yourself, which is from the Oracle at Delphi.
Yep.
Know yourself. I mean, this is one of the most ancient ideas. It's critically important, such that you are not a slave to your proclivities, but rather the master with your switches of yourself. The second part is circumstances. Everybody thinks that's a big swinger. If I ask my students, what'll make you permanently happy? It's like getting that job, graduating from college,
moving to New York City.
Yeah, having the person I love marry me. Sorry. Circumstances do affect 25% of your happiness or unhappiness, but they never last. The thing that really lasts and affects your circumstances to give you better luck and your switches so you're not mastered by your genetics is your habits. And your habits come in four categories. All the happiest people have four daily habits, and everything you do falls into one of these particular categories. Now, there's lots of little things like, you know, go to the gym and eat your vegetables and this kind of stuff. But the big four are faith, family, friendship, and work that serves others. And faith means, by the way, not necessarily traditional faith. It means a
believing
life
something
philosophy.
Bigger than yourself.
Yeah, it's something transcendental, something where you can zoom out and get peace and perspective. And that,
philosophy,
by the way, it might just be studying the Stoics.
Sure.
Just to pull that one out of the hat.
Of course, I would agree.
But by the way, and that is not inconsistent with traditional religious faith. I'm a practicing Catholic and a student of the Stoics.
Sure.
Yeah. Second is family life, the ties that bind, that don't break, and you don't choose, and God knows you wouldn't in many cases. But those are the 2 a.m. calls you can count on.
Sure.
The third is the most intimate relationships in your life, which is your friends. And that means for all the strivers that are watching us right now, real friends, not deal friends.
Yes, which you talk about in Strength to Strength.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's such a big difference. I know so many.
What did your son say? You were on the phone and you're like, oh, that was my friend. And he said, is that a work friend or a real friend?
He said, it's a real friend, Dad, or a deal friend. You have a lot of deal friends. This kid's like 11. I mean, he's been listening to me or reading my research or something. It's very annoying. And the last is work. And work's just got to have two characteristics to it. You have to earn your success and you have to serve other people, especially people with less power and privilege than you. And what an extraordinary joy it is. And I don't care if you're a bus driver or if you're a writer or a college professor or an electrician, if you believe that you're earning your success, your skills meet your passions and your accomplishments and merit are rewarded, and you serve other people and you know who they are, you'll get joy from your work.
So Zeno, founder of Stoicism, suffers a shipwreck. He washes up in Athens, penniless.
Right.
This is how the story goes. Ends up in a bookstore and he hears the bookseller reading the work of Socrates. Or a work about Socrates. Specifically, this is from Xenophon. He's reading about the choice of Hercules, right? Virtue and vice. And afterwards, he walks up to him and he says, where can I find a man like that, like Socrates? And he points him to a philosopher who's walking by and says, like there. And that's where Stoicism comes from, is this sort of philosophical encounter in a bookstore. But where it all comes full circle is Zeno had gone to the Oracle as a young man, and the Oracle had said, you will become wise when you begin to have conversations with the dead, which he realized in that bookstore was philosophy. Because philosophy is how we talk to the wisest people who ever lived, who are no longer with us.
So tell me this, what was the role? Zeno lost everything in that shipwreck. It was all of his purple ink.
Yes.
Or whatever he was selling, right?
Yeah, purple dye, which
purple
dye,
was right,
the
right. Which was super expensive stuff,
yes.
Right? It was made from seashells or from something.
Sea snails, yes,
yeah,
by slaves.
Exactly. But he was ruined.
Mm-hmm.
He had to be ruined to become complete. How's that?
Well, so he says, I made a great fortune when I suffered a shipwreck.
Was it because he suffered the shipwreck that he made the great fortune, or was it subsequent to that and serendipitous?
Well, the great fortune was discovering philosophy.
But he couldn't have done it unless
yes,
he had lost his great fortune.
Well, it's like in Fight Club. Once you lose everything, you're free to do anything. I think it was, it's not just like, oh, the serendipity of like, because of this, you know, butterfly flaps its wings, he ends up here. I think it's by losing everything, he's forced to rebuild his life. And at that rock bottom moment, it's what do I build my life around? What matters? What do I care about? He was a merchant. He was dealing in Tyrian purple because that's what his father had done and his father
right.
had done before him. So I think it wipes the slate clean. And he's like, well, now I'm at this crossroads. What direction am I going to go?
So for the people who are watching, like you, us, right now talking about this, and they're suffering because they're bereaved or they're insecure or they're sick or they're afraid, that's a huge opportunity. And they should say, something has wiped my slate clean. And like Zeno, I can actually arise anew, but in a much, much better way, right? And yeah, only because of this loss.
Yes, and that's the idea of finding the meaning in the suffering. It always allows you to reevaluate, to question, to change, to go in a different direction that had you gotten everything you thought you wanted, would not have been possible.
I hope you like this video. I hope you subscribe. But what I really want you to subscribe to is our daily Stoic email, one bit of Stoic wisdom, totally for free to the largest community of Stoics ever in existence. You can sign up at dailystoic.com/email. There's no spam. You can unsubscribe at any time. I love sending it. I've sent it every day for the last 6 years. And I hope to see you there at dailystoic.com/email.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Daily Stoic early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shay Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shay Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Guy Raz's How I Built This is a podcast where each week he talks to the founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you hear these entrepreneurs really go into their story. And Guy is an incredible interviewer. He doesn't just dance around the surface. He has real questions because he himself is an entrepreneur. He's built this huge show and this huge company. In a recent episode, they talked to the founder of Liquid Death, that crazy water company that's become this billion-dollar brand. Follow the show on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. And for a deep dive in daily business content, listen to Wondery Destination for Business podcasts with shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Wondery means business.